From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. Last week, Republican lawmakers in Wisconsin passed legislation which would strip power from the state's newly elected governor and attorney general, both Democrats. And similar lame duck session maneuvers are shaking up other states, Michigan, North Carolina, Arizona. Republicans say it's about balancing power. Democrats say it's defying the will of voters. This hour On Point, political power grabs and the future of our democracy. Join us. Do you see this as a power grab or just politics? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook where they're at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Madison, Wisconsin is Sean Johnson, the Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. He's been talking with lawmakers and voters on both sides. Sean, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Jeannie. Thanks for having me.
So Republican-controlled state legislature in Wisconsin passing a bill that would seize key powers from the incoming Democratic governor. Exactly what does the bill do?
It's hard to summarize in a nutshell because it would, I guess, carve away power here and there in a variety of different places. I think one area that's gotten a lot of attention just because it was an issue that came up on the campaign here quite a bit is that our Democratic governor-elect, Tony Evers, and the Democrat who also run our race for attorney general in Wisconsin, both promised repeatedly that if they were elected, they would remove Wisconsin from this multi-state lawsuit to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Under this bill, this now on Republican Governor Scott Walker's desk, or at least will be in his hands, they would no longer have that power. They'd have to run that by the Republican-controlled legislature first. So practically speaking, Wisconsin would be locked into that lawsuit. Mm. There is a provision in there regarding this Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, a jobs agency created by Governor Scott Walker. It controls large pots of money. Gives financial awards to businesses for job creation and job retention. And this is the agency that signed Wisconsin's contract with Taiwanese tech giant Foxconn, a $3 billion contract for Foxconn, which, if everything goes to plan, is going to make TV screens in southeast Wisconsin. This is an agency that Tony Evers, the Democratic governor-elect in Wisconsin, campaigned on eliminating. But under this plan that passed our legislature, he would have less control over the board of that agency. Initially, he would not pick the leader of that agency. And that agency, the board members of that agency, which would be picked by Republican lawmakers, a majority of them, they would choose who is the liaison between state government and Foxconn, not the governor's office.
So these are two things specifically that he campaigned on, the governor-elect Tony Evers. Also, there's a provision in there, isn't there, that limits the state's early voting period, which would make it harder for Democrats to win future elections, Sean?
Yeah, so this is not something that specifically limits the governor's power, but it's significant because we had a very close election in Wisconsin. Tony Evers defeated Scott Walker by about 30,000 votes, or less than 1% of all votes cast. In this election, early voting was huge, especially in Wisconsin's Democratic strongholds in Milwaukee County and in Dean County, where Madison is located. Under this bill, that early voting would be limited to 2 weeks before an election. And that's actually something that is similar to a previous Republican restriction on early voting that was struck down by federal court. So the presumption is that even though this restriction is slightly different, it's likely going to end back in federal court because it's so similar to something the court already struck down.
Here is Governor-elect Tony Evers on Sunday on Meet the Press on NBC saying that the people of Wisconsin voted for him because of schools and transportation and health care rather than to, quote, fight over administrative power.
They didn't elect me to fight over administrative powers in the state of Wisconsin vis-a-vis the Republican majority. No, I think this gets us off to a bad start, and I think it's a mistake.
And here's the Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss speaking on Tuesday at a press conference, talking about why the legislature is passing these bills during the lame duck session.
Whether everyone here likes it or not, I respect the fact that Tony Evers is the governor and he's going to be starting on January 7th. But he's not the governor today. And that's why we are going to make sure that the powers of each branch are as equal as they can be.
So, Sean Johnson, this all happened during this lame duck session of the state legislature. And the process was very interesting as well. These mysterious sort of closed-door meetings. There was a 4:30 a.m. vote. Tell us how this all went down.
It moved about as fast as it can in the state legislature here. I mean, they can move very quickly when they want to, and that's what happened here. These bills were introduced formally on a Friday afternoon around 4:30. There was one public hearing called for a Monday that went on most of the day. They voted the bills out of committee around midnight, and then the legislature came back in on Tuesday. And, you know, as you mentioned, the Republicans met privately most of that day into the night and into the morning, trying to decide what they could support, where the votes were, and what the final bills were going to look like. They ultimately passed these all out of our state Senate and our state assembly on Wednesday morning. And, you know, that's where things stand right now. It's a lot quieter now. When these were moving through the legislature during those few days, you had, you had some moments of tension, a bit raucous at the Capitol at times, as protesters would show up and occasionally shout down Republican lawmakers at the public hearing for this bill, and then when they were going through the state Senate.
So how is this viewed more broadly in Wisconsin? What is voter reaction generally?
I know Democratic voters are very upset. You have to look at Wisconsin and where the state has been over the past 8 years. It has been complete Republican control over state government, with Governor Scott Walker, a conservative governor, running things at the top with the help of Republicans and the state legislature. And so they've gotten their way over and over again for the past 8 years. The state has become much, you know, I guess more favorable toward Republicans in terms of a number of the changes that they've made. So this is the first chance for Democratic voters to stop that. They elected Tony Evers. It was a narrow election, but they defeated Scott Walker. And what they're seeing now is that powers that were given to Walker over the past 8 years are being taken away and then some from the governor's office.
And quickly, how is Governor Scott Walker viewing all of this?
He hasn't really said what he's going to do with these bills. He's kind of hinted at support. He has said, as other Republicans have said, that it's completely okay for them to be looking at these changes, that their terms run through early January, so there's nothing wrong with meeting in a lame duck like this. It should be noted that Walker didn't view things that way when he was coming into office back in 2010, 2011. Democrats were in state government. They were considering a lame duck session, and Walker was warning them, please don't do this.
Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. Sean, thank you very much for your time.
You're welcome.
Joining me now is David Leonhard, Pulitzer Prize-winning op-ed columnist for The New York Times. He's also co-host of The Times podcast, The Argument. David's piece yesterday was titled, How Alarmed Should We Be About Wisconsin? You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. David, thanks for being here. Nice to have you.
Absolutely. It's nice to be back.
So how would you answer the question posed in the headline of your piece, David? How alarmed should we be about Wisconsin?
Alarmed. I think we should be quite alarmed. I talked with two political scientists, Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Zablatt, who wrote a recent book, How Democracies Die. And I asked them the same question. And that was their answer. When you see what people often refer to as norms changing, with this notion that, sure, it's within the legal power of the Wisconsin legislature to weaken the incoming governor simply because he is from the other party, but it is a norm that historically that has rarely happened in the United States. And we now see it happening in multiple states, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Michigan, and you can easily see how this kind of leads to an escalation in which ultimately democracy can break down if this continues.
Here is Wisconsin Assembly Minority Leader Gordon Hintz, a Democrat, speaking of the bills that Republicans proposed that will lessen the power the governor has in the state.
The weak comments that we've heard about co-equal branches and trying to make things are fair don't stand up when you look at the actual power grabs that are being done as part of these bills today. What does suppressing the time that people can vote in the state have to do with equal branches of government, for instance? Today is a disgrace. as Republican legislature shows direct contempt for the voters of our state.
David Leonhard, you write in this piece, given the seriousness of the situation in Wisconsin, you might think that more people might be speaking out, other Republicans and corporate leaders. So far, you write, many have been silent. It shows a disappointing lack of courage. Why the silence, do you think, David?
I think that there are a lot of institutions in American life that either want to stay clear of politics unless it directly affects them, or they want to steer clear of certain kinds of politics. So national leaders want to steer clear of local politics. What I've found particularly disappointing is there are a bunch of companies that have donated to the Wisconsin Republican Party. The one that I highlighted in my column yesterday was Walgreens. In the past, it's given to both parties, but in 2018, it gave only to Republicans, including Robin Voss, one of the Republican leaders we just heard. It gave to a Republican committee to elect a Senate. And what Walgreens cares about is holding down its tax bill. I won't get into the details here, but Walgreens uses a very aggressive tax strategy in which it takes into account the value of abandoned stores when calculating its property tax bill. And they want the legislature to protect that. And so they've gave money to these Wisconsin Republicans. And I called Walgreens and I said, well, what do you think about this power grab that's going on where they're subverting the will of the voters and changing the rules and not really even pretending there's any higher principle except taking power away from Democrats? And they said, well, when we gave that money to the Wisconsin Republicans, we didn't know any of this was going to happen. And I find that unpersuasive because lots of companies have asked for donations back in other situations. And I think companies need to speak up for democracy in this situation.
David Leonhard, Pulitzer Prize-winning op-ed columnist for The New York Times. Stick with us. We are talking about GOP attempts to seize power from newly elected Democratic leaders in lame duck sessions around the country. And you can join the conversation. Listeners, are you in a state where this is happening? Do you see this as a balancing of powers or as a political power grab? We'll hear from our listeners in Wisconsin and around the country after this break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/onpoint. That's Indeed.com/onpoint. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about political power grabs in state legislatures and what that means for our democracy. You can join the conversation. Is the GOP wrong here? Do you think Democrats have been guilty of the same? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Last Tuesday, Wisconsin Representative John Negrin said that the legislature is setting a precedent with these lame duck bills.
We realize that we are setting a precedent here and making changes that are going to affect future Republican governors as well. But it puts us on an equal playing field as the legislature, to sit at the table and negotiate with the executive branch. And I think that's a positive step for the state of Wisconsin.
And here's an interview on Upfront on WISN, Wisconsin Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, explaining what he expects his relationship to be with the governor.
I think it'll be a back and forth like we've had with governors in the past. Listen, I got along great with Governor Doyle during the 8 years that he was there. But I'm hoping that Tony Evers dials it back on this very liberal agenda. And I think this budget in mid-February is certainly going to set the stage. And I hope he takes that in consideration before he rolls that out.
I'm speaking to David Leonhard, Pulitzer Prize-winning op-ed columnist for The New York Times today. I want to go right to the calls, hear from some of our listeners in Wisconsin. Mark is up first in Appleton, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. It's just so infuriating to listen to those comments from Republican lawmakers here. The idea that this would have been happening if Governor Walker had won re-election is just ludicrous. I mean, if people believe that, they are just totally deluded. They're deluding themselves. I mean, it just wouldn't have happened. And the idea that Tony Evers, A, is not that liberal of a of a politician. But of course, we've had 8 years of extreme right conservatism built on gerrymandering. I mean, they have a minority in the state. And yet they have this, and then this is we're supposed to be based on rule of law, the idea that you make laws based on principles. These are based on who won the election.
Mark, thank you. We'll get to that important point of gerrymandering in just a moment. Let's get another Mark in here from Berlin, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's New Berlin, by the way.
Thank you.
Southeastern Wisconsin.
Okay.
I think the comments that are being made by the news media on this, calling this a power grab, show a bias in itself. It's not, was it a bias? Right after Governor Walker got elected, the Democrats pushed a recall election immediately afterward. Mm-hmm. And that was not called the power grab. This is being called the power grab.
So do you see this as an equal playing field on both sides then, Mark? Is that how you see this?
I prefer that type of a government to the one we've had, because I do think that we've done too much under Walker.
Mark, thank you very much. David Leonhard, those are two very opposite ends of the spectrum there. Would you comment?
They are.
Yeah.
I think what's hard about this is we often think that situations are either kind of all or nothing or they're 50-50. Right. So the all or nothing would be Democrats have never done anything like this. And the 50-50 would be the two parties are equally to blame for behavior that's out of bounds. And the situation here is actually neither. It is true that Democrats have in Wisconsin and other places have done some really aggressive things to get power. So you could argue that a recall election is one of those. I actually think a recall election is pretty normal. There was one in California 15 years ago against the Democratic governor. And in Wisconsin, the voters decided to keep Governor Walker as their governor. But Democrats have done some things. They restrained Mitt Romney when he was the governor of Massachusetts in some modest ways. I think, however, it's wrong to suggest that it's equal on the Democratic and the Republican side. In Wisconsin, in North Carolina, in Michigan, we see Republican legislatures moving very clearly to restrict the powers of Democratic incoming governors in the way that no Democratic legislatures have done.
So tell me what's happening. Yeah. Well, let's get to Michigan first, because this
sure.
is not a one-off in Wisconsin.
It's not.
You mentioned the similar scenario playing out in Michigan. What's happening there, David Leonhard?
Extremely similar. So actually, if you don't mind, I'll very briefly go back to 2016, where the North Carolina Republican legislature
yes.
first did this,
right.
where they tried to restrict the powers of an incoming Democratic governor, Roy Cooper. The court blocked some of that. And now we see something very similar in Michigan, where they are also trying to restrict the powers of Republican legislature is trying to restrict the powers of an incoming Democratic governor. Also, the incoming Secretary of State, who's a Democrat, which is a big deal because secretaries of state set election rules. So it's just, if you look around, it's just really clear that while both parties can be aggressive, the Republicans have become much more aggressive. They are breaking many more past traditions. And another great example of this is gerrymandering. It is absolutely true that both parties gerrymander. I live in Maryland, where the Democrats do it worse than the Republicans. The same is true in Illinois. But if you look across the country, the Republicans have been much more aggressive and, in my view, much worse, because I don't like gerrymandering, about doing it than Democrats. The easiest way to see that is that despite getting a smaller percentage of the vote in recent congressional elections nationwide, the Republicans had a larger majority than the Democrats will in coming in the House. And so the reason for that is the Democrats won more votes this time, but they'll have fewer House seats. And the reason for that is quite simply Republicans have been much more aggressive about drawing boundaries to protect their seats. And so whether it's restricting governor powers, whether it's gerrymandering, whether it's flipping a Supreme Court seat, which no Democratic president has ever done, it is absolutely true, as Mark number two pointed out, that both parties can play hardball. But it is not the case that this is a both sides do it situation in terms of both sides doing it equally. Republicans have been much more aggressive about making it harder to vote, about gerrymandering, about restricting the powers of other officials from the other party.
You mentioned the number of seats that were acquired in Wisconsin. Democrats won 53% of the vote in state assembly races, but only captured 36% of the seats in the legislature, right?
Right. So the whole reason they're able to do this, right, the whole reason they're able to do this power grab in Wisconsin is, in fact, gerrymandering. right? The reason they have such a strong control over the legislature is Republicans have drawn the boundaries to be as favorable to them as possible. And even though they do not win a strong majority of the vote, they have a strong majority of seats.
So Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, where this is happening, these are politically prized regions, right, for both parties, David. So gerrymandering plays a huge role in the outcome.
Yes. And I think to look at the larger picture here, this is why you see Democrats focusing above all on democracy. The first bill that the incoming House majority by Democrats will offer, it will be called H.R. 1, House Resolution 1, because it will be the first bill, is a bill to expand voting rights, is a bill to essentially try to reduce corruption by changing some of the laws around gifts and things like that and campaign finance laws. And that is because Democrats have come to realize that they have to act on a federal level to expand voting hours because Republicans, and I find this deeply sad, right? I grew up in the 1980s when Republicans won national majorities. They didn't have to change the rules to win elections. Republicans have decided that their best chance at winning elections involves making it harder for people to vote, closing voting booths, restricting early voting hours, particularly in areas where lots of people who aren't white live. And I find that heartbreaking. I also find it dangerous. And so while President Trump won't sign anything to expand voting rights, the Democrats are trying to send a message of we want an election system where it's easy to vote. We want an election system where politicians can't get lots of gifts. And if you elect us, we'll pass that law and we'll get a president in 2021 who wants to sign it.
Let's get another listener in here. Tushar is in Dayton, Ohio. Hi, Tushar. Welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Jane, and hello to your panel. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just want to make three quick points. I'll try to be as succinct as possible. Mm-hmm. The first point is more of a historical view, as your panelist was mentioning. If you look at congressional races nationwide, Democrats tend to get millions of more votes, but hundreds less seats across state houses and the actual national Congress. And if we use presidential elections as kind of a lodestone or lodestar rather for public opinion, we see that the last two Republican presidents didn't win the popular vote and the Democratic presidents got millions of more votes. So this is kind of harkening back to like 1856 when the Whig Party was basically on its last breath and dying. Republicans are slowly starting to realize that their party is incongruent with the majority of public opinion American beliefs. The second point I'd like to make is that this changing of the rules is fundamentally antithetical to American values, especially the value of continuity of government. There is a tacit understanding that an incoming governor or incoming executive will have the same level of power to arbitrate and use the levers of power to create the change that they were mandated to create by the vote. And with Republicans changing the rules like this, you aren't having the ability to continue government in a successful, efficient, and functioning way.
Tushar, I hear you. I'm going to take it back to David Leonhard. To that first point, to Tushar's first point, would you take it that far? Do you see the Republican Party sort of fading here based on the numbers, based on what we're seeing nationally and locally?
The way our system works, I think there are sort of natural reasons why we don't have one party that tends to dominate for too long. And so I don't think that the Republican Party is going away by any means. I mean, look, the Republican Party currently controls the presidency, Congress, the Supreme Court, and most governor's office.
Right.
I believe it'll still be most come January 1. But I do think that the Republican Party has realized that it does not command the support of a majority of Americans. And so what it is now doing is it is engaged in a project, one, to make it harder for some Americans to vote, two, to gerrymander in order to keep its majority, and three, to really focus on the judiciary. Because I think Republicans can see the idea that it is likely, not certain, but likely, that Democrats will be winning more elections over the next 30 years than Republicans. And they want to constrain Democrats by filling the courts with very conservative Republican justices. Some of these things, I think, are perfectly within the bounds of normal American politics, like appointing judges who agree with you. Other things, making it hard to vote and gerrymandering, I think are really, really problematic. And so we now are in the situation in which one of our two parties is essentially anti-small D Democratic because they're worried they can't win if everyone votes. And I would much rather see a Republican Party that asked itself, well, why is it that most people under 40 and most people who are not white have no interest in voting for our party?
Let's go back to Wisconsin. Lee is in Williams Bay. Hi, Lee. I'm glad you called. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for this program. I've been very upset by this. This is a power grab. It's already been discussed. And my friends and I got together, and we made a list of all the businesses. And I live in Walworth County, which is where Lake Geneva is located. And we made a list of all the businesses that advertised Republican candidates in their windows or on their property. And if Governor Walker signs this legislation, we are going to work very diligently to make this boycott go through. And we have several Walgreens. I heard Walgreens was mentioned earlier on your program. And we have several of those in our county, and but we just cannot stand by and do nothing. And we needed to get active. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I do appreciate your call. Thank you very much. David Leonhard, you hear Lee there, what she's doing personally in her community. What has been the reaction more broadly speaking from Republican leadership in Washington? I'm thinking about outgoing House Speaker Paul Ryan, for example, who happens to be from Wisconsin.
Yeah. First of all, just to echo you, Jane Lee, I also appreciate your call and your desire to get involved. It's been near silence. I mean, I think that and even worse than that, I'm one of the reporters who over the years has interviewed Paul Ryan and had really good substantive back and forth with him about tax policy, his view of tax policy as well to the right of mine. But I've had good conversations and even debates with him about these issues. I was extremely disappointed to see him suggest that there was something nefarious going on in California with the counting of ballots there. And he did it in this disingenuous way where he said, well, I don't know if anything's fishy or not. They sure takes them a long time to count the ballots in California. No one has alleged that there's anything fishy going on, and no one serious in California. It's just that California is slow to count the absentee ballots that come in, and maybe they should be faster about it. I actually think they should be. But for Paul Ryan to come out and basically kind of do a wink and a nod seems like the reason Democrats are winning in California might be something fishy is really disappointing. And likewise, he has shown no leadership on the whole Wisconsin situation. The one silver lining of what we see here is that I think more Americans are deciding they need to get involved for the sake of their country, people like Lee. And so the Trump era, with everything worrisome we see going on, and it is deeply worrisome, also sees a real surge in citizen activism, whether it's boycotts of companies, whether it's voting, whether it's people getting engaged in groups like Indivisible. And I think that if Americans are going to beat back this attempt to really constrain democracy that we see from too many Republicans, I think people are going to have to get involved. And that can be Democrats, it can be independents, and it can be Republicans who don't want to see the future of their party depend on changing the rules as opposed to winning elections fair and square.
A couple of comments from our Facebook page. Jeffrey writes, in Wisconsin, Republicans are trying to prevent Governor-elect Evers from enacting changes administratively, particularly when it comes to the Medicare expansion. Evers complains that this is defying the will of the voters, but the voters left the Republicans in complete control of the legislature. He won the governor's race, and he hasn't stopped complaining since. And Bob writes on Facebook, wait a minute, if the Democrats take over everything, couldn't they just pass a law to undo this one? David, can they just overrule the legislature, these governors?
A couple things there. Yep. I mean, you can't just overrule the legislature. They need to win it. But I think it's really important to say we don't want an escalating war between Democrats and Republicans. We don't want a situation where we say, oh, yeah, Democrats win everything, and then you can change the rules even more than the Republicans did. We see that in Washington now. I mean, a Republican Senate refused to consider any Supreme Court nominee from a Democratic president in 2016. So what are the Democrats supposed to do? Imagine some point in the future the Democrats hold the Senate, the Republicans hold the White House. should Democrats also refuse to seat a Supreme Court justice? Should they pack the court? And so this notion that we want to see tit for tat, I actually think is very dangerous. I don't think we want the parties engaging in an arms race of changing the rules. To the first point, it is absolutely true that Republicans hold the legislature. I think if there's one thing that Democrats should be self-reflective about here, it's that Democratic voters don't vote enough in local and midterm elections, and that's not all of, but part of the reason Republicans have so much power in this country right now.
David Leonhardt is my guest, Pulitzer Prize-winning op-ed columnist for The New York Times, co-host of The Times podcast, The Argument. We are discussing GOP state power grabs across the country during their lame duck sessions, and you can join the conversation. Do you think the GOP's attempts to seize power from newly elected Democrats is a threat to our democracy or not? How is gerrymandering contributing to all this in your mind? Many more of your calls. Stick with me. We'll be back after the break. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're talking about outgoing Republican attempts to strip legislative power from incoming Democrats, and you can join the conversation. Do you think the GOP is at risk of a backlash in 2020, or is it exactly what the party in power does? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. In December 2016, then North Carolina Governor-elect Roy Cooper, a Democrat, pushed back against Republican legislators who stripped him of powers before he was even in office.
The Republican leadership in the General Assembly has put forth a number of proposed pieces of legislation over the last 12 to 24 hours. Most people might think that this is a partisan power grab, but it is really more ominous.
Cooper is still at odds with the legislature against bills passed that limit his power at as governor. And here's Michigan State Senator Debbie Stabenow on MSNBC last week talking about the GOP's attempt to kneecap Democrats about to take office.
It's a power grab, plain and simple, and they're trying to take away the will of the people of Michigan who voted for somebody that would stand up for them as an attorney general, who would stand up for them to protect their right to vote, a governor that would actually focus on the things they care about, and the Republicans who lost those offices are now trying to, behind the scenes, protect their special interest buddies by changing the rules.
I'm speaking this hour with David Leonhardt, Pulitzer Prize-winning op-ed columnist for The New York Times, co-host of The Times podcast called The Argument. A lot of listener comments here from Facebook. Barry says, this is outrageous. Elections are about the peaceful transfer of power and about the will of the people. North Carolina, Michigan, Wisconsin. Partisan GOP legislatures have brazenly been working to thwart these goals. Rob has the opposite view. Anything the Republicans can do to mitigate the damage done by Democrats is okay with me. Back to the calls, back to phones. Steve is in Rockport, Wisconsin. Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. It's great to get the call. My point is this, is that tribalism rules, and that the best thing that the GOP House and Senate there in Wisconsin can do is to push back as much as they possibly can, to put everything in the way they possibly can to make the Democratic governor, who is elected by less than 1% of the vote, a total failure. And also, I've got a question for you as a commentator. Why do you insist on saying that we're a democracy when we're a constitutional republic?
All right, Steve, maybe I'll turn that to David, the scholar with us. Steve, thank you for the call.
I mean, look, we're both. I think it's perfectly fine to call the United States a democracy. Many leaders have called it that way over the years. We have voting. You're right. We're also a constitutional republic. And so I'm comfortable using either phrase.
Let's get Abby in the call, in the line here from DeForest, Wisconsin. Hi, Abby. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm pretty angry about what's been going on. I think back on how me and a lot of other people in my area worked really hard to get the new governor and attorney general elected. We knocked on a lot of doors. Nobody was paying us. We talked to our neighbors, convinced them to vote for these candidates. And also, while we're doing that, weekly we're getting mailers coming in from Americans for Prosperity that has no investment in our state, our communities. A lot of investment in their pocketbooks, though. And we're fighting back against that. And then we did manage to get Tony Evers and Josh Call elected as our governor and attorney general. And then before they're even in office, the state legislators, the Republican state legislators, are doing various things to prevent them from achieving their campaign promises that they made to us as voters.
And so does it make you angry, Abby? How are you feeling about it?
Very angry, yes. It also sets up this antagonistic relationship before they're even in office, because Democrats that were recently elected, they have two choices. They can either fight back or they can just passively take these attempts to strip away their powers. Mm-hmm. And I know the voters that got them into office will not let them be passive. So then that sets up that they have to fight back. And it just sets up the next 4 years of both sides fighting back from one another, when really there should be a collaboration, because really the job is to care about the people of state and do what's best for the people of state. And there's always common ground there, and they need to find it.
Abby, thank you for the call from Wisconsin. You're living it firsthand. Let's go down to Florida, Sarasota.
Jane, can I just jump in very
sure.
quickly?
Yep, no
I apologize.
Problem. No problem.
I just wanted to encourage Abby not to despair, because I completely understand why people get frustrated. But I would remind you, Abby, that the work you did matters. The fact that the results of these elections have not been completely reversed. I think they've been reversed in a way that I think is inappropriate, but they have not been by any means completely reversed or even mostly reversed. And I would encourage you to think a little bit about the lesson of the civil rights movement in this country. In retrospect, we think of the civil rights movement as being a glorious success, and it was. But it didn't feel that way for most of its history. Throughout the 1940s and 1950s and even into the 1960s, it usually felt like a series of defeats. People tried to register other Americans to vote, and they were beaten back, sometimes literally. Again and again and again, it often felt like defeat. But people figured out a way to keep fighting and to keep hope in relatively modest, initially, political victories. And that's what a movement of political change, which it sounds like you're involved in, needs to do. And so I guess I would just encourage you not to despair, celebrate the victories, and try to channel some of your frustration into continuing to work, because it sounds like you really care about what's going on in your community and your country. So thanks for letting me add that, Jane.
No problem. Abby, thank you for the call. Here's Teresa in Enid, Oklahoma. Hi, Teresa. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just want to say I'm an independent, and I really don't feel like either party is representing a large portion of the population. And frankly, I think the duopoly is outdated. I think it's become so corrupt that it's blatantly so. Harvard has a study out that says, you know, our politicians pay zip attention to what the citizens want, but that they totally do what the corporations want. And I think that's reflected in the corporate mainstream media. There are a lot of big issues that aren't being covered and talked about, and there's
I'll jump in, Teresa, for time's sake, but we're covering this one. I do appreciate it. And one more here, David in Boston. Hi, David, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm honestly kind of on board with this sort of power grab, and I think there should be more of them. And it's not for the reason that the Republicans are the ones that are doing it or the Democrats are the ones that are doing it. It's because putting all the power in just the governorships or the presidencies is kind of part of our problem right now. We need the Congress and the legislatures to be the ones that have the power. Otherwise, every 2 or 4 years, we're just going to have this whiplash where the next party takes over, and it's not going to be reflective of the people. It never will be, because too much power in one person, absolute power corrupts absolutely. You're never going to have the will of the people shown, and I don't think they're democracies. I think the legislature needs the power.
David, thank you. It's an interesting argument. David Leonhard, how do you respond?
I think in the larger sense, I'm sympathetic to parts of it. I agree with you. It would be good to see Congress assert itself more than it has and have a Congress that actually functions and passes more laws rather than deferring so often to the courts and the presidency, often out of dysfunction. But it's not the case that the Wisconsin governor before this happened had absolute power or anything close to it. The incoming Democratic governor in Wisconsin is going to be able to accomplish relatively little legislatively because Republicans control the legislature. So this wasn't a case of the Wisconsin governor having absolute power or anything close to it, and it wasn't a case of the legislature making a principled change. They obviously waited till they lost, and then they took an office that already would have been highly constrained and constrained it further, and specifically make it impossible for the incoming governor to deliver on campaign promises that he made. So although I'm sympathetic in part to it, to me, I don't really think it's fair to credit the Wisconsin legislature with acting on principle here or to worry that the Wisconsin governor would be all powerful without this change.
David, thank you for the call. David Leonhard, I'm curious from a larger perspective. Take us up to 30,000 feet here. How do you believe this all affects the health of our democracy? In your piece, you quote your colleague Paul Krugman that American states were once praised as, quote, laboratories of democracy that are in danger of becoming laboratories of authoritarianism. How do you see this from a broader perspective as it relates to the health of who we are?
I'm worried. I did not expect in my lifetime to see one of our two political parties be so aggressive about doing things like trying to make it harder to vote. I didn't expect to see a campaign, as we've just seen in North Carolina, with really substantial election fraud, with the changing of absentee ballots by a consultant. And the bulk of this activity is happening from only one of the two parties, the Republican Party. And it's not because they're bad people and Democrats are good people. It's because they've decided that their best hope at winning elections involves making it harder for people to vote, or in a few cases, cheating, as in North Carolina. And I find that really worrisome. I think it puts Democrats in a tough position to figure out, do they respond aggressively or not? But I guess the advice I would give to ordinary people like you and me and the listeners, rather than politicians, is get involved. The only way to protect our democracy and the only way this ends well is if people say, I don't want to live in a country where it's harder to vote. I want to live in a country where it's easier. And people should recognize that even amidst the alarming signs, there is also some progress. Florida just restored the voting rights of more than a million people, disproportionately African-American, people who had been convicted of a crime and had their voting rights taken away. We have seen some expansions of voting rights across the West, including both red states and blue states. And so it really is possible to make progress on this stuff, but it's not going to happen naturally. People are going to have to fight for it. And I think we're entering an era in which we really are going to see a political contest over the health and the future of American democracy, and how much people get involved will determine the outcome of that contest.
Back to the phones. Joe in Sarasota, Florida. Hi, Joe. Glad you waited. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. I'm a registered Republican here in Sarasota, Florida, which is a pretty strong Republican area. And I have to say that I'm really disturbed how our party has been treating people in their own party as well as Democrats. This idea in Wisconsin of controlling the governor makes me not want to vote for Republicans. And it's a difficult thing because there are some good policies that they have. But this is petty to me. It's like children fighting in a schoolyard.
Joe, thanks so much for the call. Do appreciate it. Jeff is in Baltimore, Maryland. Let's get your perspective. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'll try to make this as succinct as possible.
Okay.
I kind of feel like this conversation is a bit one-sided. For example, President Obama was given way more executive power during his 8 years, and he initiated something like DACA, but then Trump takes power and uses the exact same power to remove DACA or try to remove DACA, and everybody gets up in arms. Oh, now the president has too much power. And when it comes to gerrymandering, I acknowledge that it happens in red states, but I live in Maryland, one of the worst gerrymandered states for the Democrats. California is the same way, and so is New York. I mean, Maryland's is so bad that the state Supreme Court's had to come back twice and say, no, this isn't going to work. And if y'all don't do it right now, we'll assign somebody to do it right.
Jeff, thank you. No, it's an important point, and we should bring it up. I mean, it is true, David Leonhardt, Maryland was a particularly egregious case of gerrymandering. When you talk about there being a parallel here, I mean, you'd point to Maryland for sure, to Joe's point.
Oh, yeah. And I'm not sure if you were listening earlier, but I specifically mentioned Maryland and Illinois as two states. Mm-hmm. Again, what's hard is, yes, both parties do it, but it is wrong to suggest it's equal. So Democrats want a larger share of the House vote in this election, but they'll have a smaller majority than Republicans have had after winning a smaller votes because Republicans do more gerrymandering. There is no example of incoming Democratic legislatures stripping the powers from an incoming Republican governor, as we've seen in North Carolina and Ohio and Michigan. There is no example of a Democratic Senate flipping a Supreme Court seat, to the other party. Parties have rejected Supreme Court nominees, but the same party always got to renominate. There's no example of flipping. And so again, it's this issue of, yes, this isn't an issue of it's all Republicans and no Democrats. I agree with the caller. I think what Obama and Trump have done on DACA, the substance of it is very different. But I don't think what Trump did is any worse from an executive power standpoint from what Obama did. They're equal. It is certainly the case that both parties do this. But I would ask you to look around with an open mind and say, is it really 50-50? Or in fact, are Republicans engaging in many more efforts to change the rules, to make it harder to vote, to do things like flip a Supreme Court seat? You can come up with examples of Democrats doing stuff that's not great. But the list of examples doesn't come anywhere close to the serious. And I don't think we should go into something just deciding we want the outcome to be, well, both sides do it equally. We should look at the evidence. And when you look at the evidence, it is clear that Republicans right now are more afraid of the normal functioning of democracy in this country than Democrats are. They're the ones trying to make it harder to vote, not Democrats.
Jeff, thank you so much for the call. In our last 30 seconds here, David Leonhardt, does this all help or hurt the Republicans with moderate voters that the president considers really crucial for his 2020 reelection effort? How do you see it?
I don't think most voters care about process. And so I don't actually think 2 years from now, most voters will be going to the polls and voting on this process stuff. I think that's unfortunate. I do think the bigger vulnerability for Republicans is they're consistently lining up on the sides of corporations. And there are a lot of things that voters want, better health care, lower taxes for the middle class that right now Republicans are against. I think that is more likely to hurt them than the process stuff.
Such an interesting conversation. David Leonhardt, Pulitzer Prize-winning op-ed columnist for The New York Times. David, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jane.
Continue the conversation, listeners. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. We're there at On Point Radio. Listeners, thanks to you. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.